Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887. 866-96-POTUS. That is the number to call up. Let me get right to it because I've been annoyed all week long. And it's not because of people that I'm about to talk to, because we've got Representative James Clyburn coming into studio this evening. I'm here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., right down the block from the state capitol and what have you. And Representative Clyburn is coming in part to promote his new book, The First Eight, A Personal History of the Pioneers, Black Congressmen Who Shaped the Nation. So I'm interested in talking to him about that, but it's inescapable how we're going to talk about the Democratic Party, the world of politics that is going on as we speak, the kind of things that we have to deal with, and the kind of things that I think has served to divide this country instead of bringing us together. Now, I'm not living pie in the sky, and I don't have an attitude, particularly here in the nation's capital in front of a live studio audience. I don't have this kind of attitude where I'm living in a fantasy world, not recognizing that division is a part of life, that people have different beliefs, different ideology. They walk around thinking and feeling the way that they want and the way that they believe. And sometimes that's diametrically opposed to fellow American citizens. Nobody is oblivious enough to know that that kind of stuff doesn't happen. But the manner in which those feelings, those emotions are stoked by people on Capitol Hill is something that I've lamented quite a long time. And one of the biggest reasons why I've been involved in the world of politics these days. I have a job. Life is pretty damn nice. I could have stayed in sports and minded my business and lived happily ever after. But as an American citizen, as a black man, as a voter, somebody that's concerned and prides myself in being a conscientious observer, I look at the things that divide our nation and I get really, really perturbed over it, to say the least. And Donald Trump's reaction to Rob Reiner and his wife being killed, allegedly by their son over the weekend, is the latest kind of stuff that I'm talking about. Understand that we've got more important issues going on. I'm certainly not trying to imply that two individuals being murdered heinously, I might add, by their own son, allegedly, is not important. I'm certainly not trying to imply that. But that's going to affect the lives of them and their families. What we're talking about here with the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies is tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of American citizens. You've got a situation where the Affordable Care Act and the subsidies that were implemented during COVID, it reaches an expiration December 31st. As of January 1st, premiums are expected to rise sky high. And there are an abundance of Americans that's going to have a very, very difficult time paying for that. And what we see on Capitol Hill is a bunch of nonsense that's been going on. And I'll get into all of that in a second. But if I'm going to bring up the word nonsense, the first order of business is to start off with the president, who I will openly admit has pissed me off. And the reason he's pissed me off is because he's made life difficult for people like myself, who are inclined and downright anxious to talk about the issues and say yay or nay to it. How do you feel about his performance on the economy? How do you feel about inflation in this day and age and what it's looking like right now? Is there an impending recession or are we already in one? What about immigration? What about border security? What about the use of ICE in order to sort of support his goal? What about safety in the streets of America? What about the jobless rate? What about unemployment reaching about 4.6%, which is the highest it's been since 2021? What about this money that was supposed to be coming into this country, courtesy of all of these pledges you received, and whether or not that was going to come to fruition, generating in excess of trillions of dollars, which was going to help fuel the economy while also dissipating that $38.4 trillion debt that we're supposed to be trying to trim down? What about those things? Those are issues. Wouldn't you say those are issues worth talking about? I'd say those are issues worth talking about, but we don't get to talk about that. Why? because they had the Epstein files that obviously were relevant in people's eyes to some degree, so much so that some members of MAGA turned against Trump with that. Originally, his attitude after campaigning on it, by the way, after campaigning on releasing that stuff, you know what it was going to be about? Hey, it's no big deal. What's the big deal? It's really not a problem. Why are you guys so fixated on this? Until MAGA folks got involved and said, wait a damn minute. You did campaign on this. This issue is important to us. We want those files open. And then after much and much and much resistance, all of a sudden we learned after our votes on Capitol Hill that eventually it will be released this month. Not immediately. We'll take a look. We'll see. We'll grab hold of it. We'll see what we want to redact or whatever. And then we'll sit up there and we'll put it out there for you to see. I can't wait to see how much stuff is blacked off. But that's a different subject to another day. To Rob Reiner and his wife. Allegedly brutally murdered by their own son. Even had Kevin Frazier from Entertainment Tonight come on this show and said there was rumors and reports about their throats being slashed. Originally, we heard about a $4 million bond for their son, Nick, to be let out of jail. And then we heard bond was revoked and there is no bond. He's going to have to stay and he's going to have to stay in jail for the foreseeable future. And before the bodies got cold, excuse my expression, I'm not trying to be inappropriate here. I'm trying to accentuate the seriousness of how vile, how disgusting, how belligerent, how petty our president can be. This man, the 47th president of the United States, puts out this tweet 2 days ago. I'm going to read it to you. Quote, very sad thing happened last night in Hollywood. Rob Reiner, a tortured and struggling but once very talented movie director and comedy star, has passed away together with his wife, Michelle, reportedly due to the anger he caused others through his massive, unyielding, and incurable affliction with a mind-crippling disease known as Trump Derangement Syndrome. Sometimes referred to as TDS. He was known to have driven people crazy by his raging obsession of President Donald J. Trump, with his obvious paranoia reaching new heights as the Trump administration surpassed all goals and expectations of greatness. And with the golden age of America upon us, perhaps like never before, may Rob and Michelle rest in peace. Classless, tasteless, asinine, disgusting, all of those things are appropriate, something people are hesitant to say about the president these days. Now, I'm a person that's been on the record, and I have been raging against the Democratic Party that I've had nothing but disgust for over the last couple of years because of their strong leaning towards woke and cancer culture and the extreme left. And for those who had a problem with me taking that position, let me stay here in front of the cameras, in front of the live studio audience. I could give less than a damn. I don't care. Because to me, the vast majority of American citizens, even when you don't get what you want, the vast majority of American citizens are not on the fringes. They're towards the center. Not totally, but they're towards there. Reasonable conclusions, a willingness to compromise, and understanding that everybody doesn't get to get everything they want. Because all of us don't think the same. We're not from the same DNA. We don't have the same proclivities. We don't have the same preferences. We don't have the same likes. We don't have the same beliefs. And that's okay. Because in a country like the United States of America, which is supposed to be a gorgeous mosaic, one of the elements that we lean on is a level of understanding that we have towards and respect towards one another for the fact that you might be different than I am. And something might be more important to you than it is to me. You might care more about the economy than I do. Somebody else might care about abortion more than somebody else. Somebody else might care more about the border than somebody else. Somebody else's priority might be safety in the streets. And because all of those things are going on, you have to have a level of sensitivity towards those things and understand and appreciate the differences. But it's easier to accept, in my estimation, when you are dealing with folks on Capitol Hill who get that and to make sure that they disseminate that kind of message so they don't cause chaos and disruption and mayhem in the streets of America while they're on Capitol Hill. You remember what they did during the shutdown, don't you? 43 days. government employees furloughed or laid off, let go, and those who were kept weren't being paid. Weren't being paid. But the politicians were being paid. So the people who were elected officials, assigned, I might add, assigned to work on Capitol Hill in a productive enough fashion to avoid shutdowns, these same people didn't do their job. That lent itself towards you not getting paid, but then they turned around and they get paid. This is what has been going on. This is the problem. This is why you see a level of frustration that turns violent. Remember, I come from the world of sports. Fan. That's short for fanatics. In the world of sports. So coming from that world and seeing how rabid people can be, you develop a level of understanding that makes you say, if they're that way with sports, how are they going to be with real life? Because sports don't determine your health care. Sports don't determine your safety in the streets. Sports doesn't concern your affordability. You can choose to go to a game. You can choose not to go. You can choose to support your team. You can choose to purchase cable and watch them on television. You can choose to do a lot of things, or you can choose not to. You have that choice at your disposal. Our choices are left up to the politicians on Chapel Hill when it comes to real life issues. When you've got the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, and its subsidies scheduled to expire December 31st, you've got people that were paying $260 a month that are expecting to pay over $2,000 if that doesn't get addressed. What are you going to do about that? The average American citizen can't afford that. They can't afford that kind of discrepancy. They can't afford that spike. But instead of talking about these things, instead of making sure you negotiate these things to get these matters resolved, we've heard about all of this other stuff. And now you've got Trump issuing quotes like this to a point where, okay, Marjorie Taylor Greene, even she had to speak out against him. Rob Reiner and his wife were tragically killed at the hands of their own son, who reportedly had drug addiction and other issues. And their remaining children are left in serious mourning and heartbreak. This is a family tragedy, not about politics or political enemies. Many families deal with a family member with drug addiction and mental health issues. It's incredibly difficult and should be met with empathy, especially when it ends in murders. How about Representative Thomas Massie? These are both Republicans now. In fairness to the GOP, everybody's not falling in line with Trump the way that they were doing the first few months of his return to the White House. Representative Massie, regardless of how you felt about Rob Reiner, this is inappropriate and disrespectful discourse about a man who was just brutally murdered. I guess my elected GOP colleagues, the VP, and the White House staff will just ignore it because they're afraid. I challenge anyone to defend it. Another representative, Mike Lawler. This statement is wrong. Regardless of one's political views, no one should be subjected to violence, let alone at the hands of their own son. It's a horrible tragedy that should engender sympathy and compassion from everyone in our country, period. Piers Morgan. This is a dreadful thing to say about a man who just got murdered by his troubled son. Delete it, Mr. President. Delete it. Let me make sure that I quote Senator Ted Cruz, who was sitting right here next to me in this same studio just about 3 weeks ago or so. He says, I'm deeply saddened by the horrific murder of Rob Reiner and his wife. He was one of the most talented movie makers to have ever lived. From Spinal Tap to When Harry Met Sally, from A Few Good Men to my favorite movie of all time, The Princess Bride, we are weeping the loss of a comedic and storytelling master. His movies touched us deeply and spoke to our fundamental humanity. Rob Reiner was one of a kind, and he will be missed. The tragic circumstances of his murder make it all the more horrible. Heidi and I are praying for his family. Rest in peace. Here's what we should pay attention to. For a change, we haven't heard anything from the Democrats. And I want to say thank you. I applaud that. Because the chances are, if the Democrats open their mouth, they'd blow the momentum they're building. You see, this hatred for President Trump, justified or not, depending on who you ask, the reality is that it's been an impediment to the Democrats' success along the way. And that's how I'm looking at this right now, particularly as we approach Christmas. Because Christmas could come and go, but don't think those folks that are worried about their health care ain't worried about the expiration of the subsidies on December 31st. So their Christmas is already compromised because no agreement has been reached. A vote is taking place as we speak. It's not expected to pass, which means you won't have a resolution, which means as a result of that, even though the continual resolution has already been resolved, at least momentarily, the bottom line is healthcare matters haven't been resolved. And you got a president that's literally sitting in front of the camera when he's not making such asinine statements like this, sitting there giving himself an A++++ grade on the economy when everybody knows there's no way possibly that you could do that. Unemployment's at 4.6%. Inflation is relevant. A recession could be before our very eyes. You're talking about these opportunities that have come from everywhere, all of these pledges by these companies in the trillions of dollars. Where's the money? We haven't seen it yet. Has there been a collapse in our economy? No. But has there been a flourishing economy? We can't say that. Can't say it at all. And yet you sit here and you give yourself a grade, and if people believe it enough and hear it enough and what have you, I guess that some people will embrace that mentality. You're the Democrats. Here's the point. Shut the hell up. Don't say anything. Don't say anything about woke culture. Don't say anything about cancel culture. Don't get into identity politics. Don't do any of that. Stick to health care. Stick to affordability. And make sure that you have an answer to the problems that persist, because contrary to what you led people to believe leaning into the 2024 election, you didn't have it. Yeah, unemployment rate was a little less, but you had a whole bunch of people having government jobs. Well, if they're government jobs, that's taxpayer dollars that's funding them. If you need taxpayer dollars to fund folks who are working in the government and to fund the government overall, what are you ultimately doing? You're ultimately contributing to the debt because we're spending money we don't have. And by spending money that we don't have, where does that lead us? That lead us to another election where they're talking about the deficit and we're talking about the mismanagement of money and we're talking about American citizens having to suffer because future generations, our children and our children's children and our children's children's children are going to have to pay the price for what you mismanaged. What you mismanaged. And that's both sides of the aisle. So that's how I look at this, ladies and gentlemen. That's where I'm coming from with this. And for those out there that's going to look at me, you know, Stephen A., who the hell is he? You know what I mean? You living quite well, Stephen A. Man, I was broke. Where were you the first 45 years of my life? Don't come to me when I start making a little paper and then chide me. You weren't around when I was growing up in Hollis, Queens. You weren't around when I had holes in my roof, when I saw rats and roaches running around, when I barely had a pot to piss in and I had a mother taking care of six kids, starving herself and working like God knows what, 7 days a week. 7 days a week, 16 hours a day, 1 week's vacation a year for 20 years. I know what welfare cheese smells. I know what welfare bread and cheese smell tastes like. This is not unfamiliar to me. I don't want to hear that nonsense. When I hear a president talking about how, you know, and the economy is great and the affordability issue is a Democratic hoax, what are you talking about? You're a billionaire. I'm not dismissing that. We live in a capitalistic society. I want you to make your money. I want everybody to get paid. I believe in free market capitalism. I believe in that more than I believe in socialism. I believe in that more than I believe in communism. I believe in that more than I believe in fascism or Marxism. I can tell you that much. I believe there's only one philosophy that works. I believe in capitalism. Do I believe there should be some government oversight in terms of making sure that people are operating on the up and up instead of fooling the system? Yes, I do. But only for that purpose. In a world of capitalism, that springs hope because you got an opportunity to capture the American dream. And that's what it's all about. That's why people come from all corners of the world to try to be the United States of America. But what's life going to be like when you get here? Particularly with a president that's fixated on retribution, no matter what anybody says, that is as petty as it comes, that defines his moral compass and decency by who he likes and dislikes, as opposed to what's fair-minded and what's decent and what's beyond the pale and what isn't. These are the kind of questions that we have to ask ourselves. And for once, I don't have a guest in the first hour, which means the lines are open right now. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. Between that and this live studio audience in front of me, I'm going to have a whole bunch of people that's got some questions. And Lord knows I've got some answers. I'm not saying this is what you're going to like, but I have them. I have them, at least from my perspective. You are listening live with Straight Shooter with Stephen A. right here in the house, live from the nation's capital, right down the block where these folks are voting yet again without reaching a resolution on health care. So if I sound like I got an attitude, figure out why. Do that in a break. We'll be back with more in a minute. Stephen A., Straight Shooter in the house. Back with more in a minute. Past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Coming at you every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio, channel 124. Number to call up as always is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Before I go to the calls on the line, I've got some studio audience members here wanting to ask me questions. So I'm going to go to y'all first. Hello, introduce yourself and please ask your question.
Hi, I'm Jane from D.C. You recently said that you think Michelle Obama would easily win the Democratic nomination and maybe even the presidency if she ran. What role would you like to serve in her cabinet?
None. I have no desire to serve a role in Michelle Obama's cabinet or Barack Obama's cabinet for that matter. I respect and revere our former president. I think Michelle Obama is the greatest first lady in history. I absolutely revere her. But in the same breath, the only reason why I would want to, first of all, if I was involved in politics officially in terms of being in somebody's cabinet, it would be my own. I'd run and I'd be determined to win. And if I'm not running, I'm going to sit in the exact seat that I'm sitting in right now, raising hell, because I do that well. So I would choose that. I would choose that role. I want to be somebody giving the directives and making sure people are executing my vision of what I think my administration in this country should be, not deferring to somebody else's vision. But I do believe that as knowledgeable and as smart and as gifted of an orator as she is, that Michelle Obama, I think that women would come out in droves of voting for her. I think that women are obviously a very, very strong electorate that whose support she would have. And I think as a result of that, that would propel her to heights unseen, but clearly she doesn't want that challenge. I did have an issue with her saying that America as a country isn't ready. I think she is wrong. I think she's dead wrong. And I say that respectfully. But the reason why it doesn't sound that way is because I'm saying it respectfully, but with a bit of irritability. I'm sick and tired of men being blamed for certain things that we don't deserve to be blamed for. Hillary Rodham Clinton won the popular vote over Donald Trump in 2009 by 2.9 million votes. That's us not being ready. I don't think that's us not being ready. Kamala Harris was the Democratic nominee for the presidency of the United States of America in 2024, who brags about receiving nearly 75 million votes, the most of any Democratic candidate in history. Is that the country not being ready? Or is that you campaigning wrong? To at least a little bit, 107 days, etc. Governor of New York is a woman. The governor-elect of New Jersey is a woman. The governor-elect of Virginia is a woman. The former Speaker of the House, who is revered by most politicians on the left, is a woman, Nancy Pelosi. There is too much evidence that has shown that this country has evolved, and that when you think about men, I think most of us have come to the conclusion that women are pretty much smarter than us, more civil than us, incredibly capable of leading. And I resent the fact that anybody would imply otherwise at this stage and point in our country's history, because I think we've proven that that's wrong. You don't have to win a presidential election to prove that. And when Representative Clyburn comes in here, I'll ask him to his face, because we disagree based on his public position about that as well. I do not agree with them at all. I think it's a cop out. And Michelle Obama can prove me wrong anytime she wants to. Run. I dare you. And watch how many people will come out and vote for her. She will win the Democratic nomination in a cakewalk. Nobody out there would beat Michelle Obama right now? Nobody, at least on the Democratic side. What you going to do on the Republican side? Do I believe she could beat Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance? Yes, I do. Trump is a different animal because you have people that want to support him, just don't want to admit it. And so as a result, they might vote for him but would never tell you. They'll just go to the polls and vote. But J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio, I think people would publicly display their support or lack thereof for either candidate. And I think Michelle Obama would have a chance to win. Okay? Thank you so much. Let me go to Corin in Ohio. You're live with Stephen A. How are you?
What's up, Stephen A? Doing well. How about yourself, man?
How you doing, my man? How's everything? Thank you for calling.
Good, good. Yeah, so my question is about, it's called cultural equity. And I feel like your entire career, you've been very proud black man. You've promoted African-American athletes. You've highlighted the discrepancy in coaching and the front offices. You talked about having a black billionaire owner in the NFL. It's well past time for that. So you've been very, very pro-African-American your entire career, 30-year-plus career. But you come out and you say obvious things that have been wrong with the Democratic Party. You ask Jasmine Crockett some very real questions, especially now those questions have been raised now that she's running for Senate,
yep,
about how the way that she's how she's gone about her career so far, how will that help her and her constituents in the future? Why do you think that when that happens, all the things that you've done in the past can be thrown away that you've done for African Americans, and then you make a couple comments that are, you know, that can be seen as true or at least are up for debate, a very lively and real debate, all those things can be cast aside, and then now you're, for lesser of a better term, your Uncle Tom in some people's eyes?
Well, first of all, there's two obvious answers to that question. The first answer is that in politics, all of those things are not only possible, but ordinary. It happens all the time. Anytime somebody is looking for what's politically expedient, particularly as it pertains to a politician or pundits who support that side of the aisle, that's what's going to happen. And so you got to understand that those are big boy, big girl rules. You got to know that. The other side to it is that that's the elephant in the room that black folks don't want us talking about. We don't hesitate to throw our own under the bus. It's just a fact. It's sad, but it's true. You can do 99 things positive as a black person for your own community. And the second somebody profoundly disagrees with you, they can't disagree with just what you've done. They've got to castigate who you are and they have to label you. It happens on too many occasions, but we also have to understand that from an historical perspective, that has happened as well. When we saw Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. making the strides that he made, there were people who took sides between him and Malcolm X, because they had a different philosophy and a different ideology. And it wasn't enough for one to be different than the other. One had to be too angry, too acerbic, not the right voice for our people. The other was too soft and weak and came across as an Uncle Tom and stuff like that. This is what they said about our black leaders. And on many, many occasions, that stuff has happened, but you got to have the intestinal fortitude to move beyond that, to understand how that can be very, very annoying. And in my case, insulting, because in some instances, it's come from people that I've loved, that I've cared for, that I've looked out for or tried to, and they know better and they know they're not telling the truth, but it's politically expedient with what they're trying to do with their YouTube shows and their podcast shows and all of that stuff to come across as being authentic with their fake rage. You have to be able to stomach that. Everybody can't stomach what I can stomach. People forget that when it comes to me, and I'm looking at my audience as I say this, people forget that my background is in journalism, that I've spent the first 20 years of my life being a print journalist. They forget that when you're trained as a journalist, you're not trained to have friends. You don't want enemies, but you're not trained to have friends. You're literally supposed to be in pursuit of the truth. And in pursuit of the truth, whatever comes with it, whatever level of venom, vitriol, or whatever comes with it, you have to accept that because you're not there to be liked. Think about White House reporters historically covering the White House over the years and Capitol Hill. Think about some of the things that were said about them. Think about when they'd be on the Sunday morning shows. Think about when they had to answer critics or whatever. And then they shoved it off their shoulders like nothing. Why? Because they knew they weren't there to be liked. They were there to report an inch as close to accuracy as you can possibly get with all of these spin doctors and everybody else. building walls to prevent you from getting as close to the truth as you'd like it to get. Think about what President Nixon said about reporters and other people doing Watergate. Think about what the Reagan administration said about folks covering the Iran-Contra affair. Think about what happened with George W. Bush when, you know, when he was swearing up and down no new taxes before he provided new taxes. Think about Clinton and the Monica Lewinsky scandal. You know, think about George W. Bush, you know, when he went to war, and think about, you know, Saddam Hussein and how, you know what, you were going after him when he wasn't really supposed to be the target. And so much stuff that we heard about the late Dick Cheney and some of the decisions that he made, et cetera, et cetera. List goes on and on and on where vitriol and insults and all of those kind of things were thrown out there to insult people's character. Where they made a mistake with me is that I can take it and I can give it back, and I can take it and then say nothing and keep on going on. Jasmine Crockett was a perfect example. I apologized to Jasmine Crockett, but people mistook what I was doing. What I apologized for was because Trump's reaction in the aftermath of some of the things that I said and people making the assertion that I contributed to him insulting her as a lady when he called her low IQ. For that, I sincerely apologize, because I don't want to contribute to those kind of insults going in the direction of any lady or any human being. But what I did when I spoke on her, I stand by that to this very moment. I simply asked a question. Is calling the president a piece of shit on television going to help you? At the time, you had 766,000 constituents. You still have that. But I said, you are a smart woman. You are accomplished. You are a lawyer by trade. You have a license to practice law in Texas and Arkansas as well as federally. And if you remember my words weeks ago, what did I say? Why aren't you thinking about the Senate? 766,000 people in your district. But if you run for Senate, that's 31 million people in Texas. There's only two state senators. One of them would be you. What about that? And sure enough, here we are. Who's running for Senate? So people forget that. And as a journalist, as somebody who was trained as a journalist, you have to remember that and march forward, because it ain't about what people say. It's also about what you do. And as long as I got this microphone and I got these cameras and I got this reach and I've got my own voice, as I said weeks ago, I will say again, I'm not going away. So you're going to have to deal with it whether you like it or not, and trying to act like something happened that didn't happen. Let folks who aren't as conscientious as me, or just want to come out with their fake rage, acting like they're making noise about something which is really much ado about nothing, I'm going to sit up here and do this show. They talk about folks like Representative Clyburn. I have him come in the studio. They talk about folks like Senator Ted Cruz. I had him in studio. They talk about people like Speaker Mike Johnson or Jim Jordan. OK, I've had them on this show. They've talked about Governor Shapiro or Wes Moore or Spencer Cox or Hakeem Jeffries or Madeleine Dean and people like that. I've had them all on this show. There are people who talk, and then there are people who do. And in my case, I talk and do. Period. That's my response to that. Appreciate the call, though. Anything else, Corin, before I let you go? Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Go ahead, buddy. I know you got a question. Studio question from this gentleman right here. Tell us your name and ask your question.
I'm Owen from Washington, D.C., and I have to ask, who has the worst hot takes, Donald Trump or Skip Bayless?
I can joke about this, because Skip Bayless, know I'm having fun with him. Skip Bayless is a noted sports analyst. We used to work at ESPN, got me started on First Take. I owe a lot of what I've achieved to him, and I'm grateful to him. He and I are still friends to this very day. Then he left for FS1, offered him a lot of money, and he was there for years before he stepped away from that just a few months ago. I would tell you that the worst take has been from Skip Bayless, who said that Tim Tebow was more clutch than LeBron James and Kobe Bryant. Now, there's something wrong with that man. Something wrong with that man. But that's all in fun. There's no question that the worst takes have been from President Donald Trump, because he religiously engages in hyperbole. He will bloat his statistical data. He will bloviate about things that he is doing when it's not official that he has done it. You know, just like, for example, I've ended seven wars. Well, we're still waiting for Russia, Ukraine to end. You talked about bombing Iran, and obviously that appeared to be the right thing to do. And I'm sure the Jewish community doesn't have any problem with that, considering how they serve to really, really finance terrorists and what have you. And they've got their proxies, whether it's Hezbollah, it's Hamas, or anybody else. But we still, even after the bombing, even after the war between Israel and Hamas essentially has ended with how Israel just destroyed the Gaza Strip and what have you, and Benjamin Netanyahu reduced that place to rubble, we still find ourselves just recently reading in the newspapers how Tehran is still financing folks, and they refuse to backtrack from who they are and what they stand for and how they're committed to wiping Israel off the face of the earth. And so when you take those things into consideration, what do you mean stuff has ended? What do you mean stuff has been resolved? You know, you're clearly in pursuit of a Nobel Peace Prize. Who told you you deserved that? It's not finished yet. The job is not finished. And I think the thing that we should all be alarmed about is how often the president talks as if the job is completed. It's not. We're still waiting for these results to reach fruition. You know, when you talk about the state of economy, we appreciate the fact that it's not a collapse. But inflation and threats of a recession have been something that we've been hearing a lot about over the last few months. You doing business overseas. Let's remember what Marjorie Taylor Greene said about him, which I thought was very profound. You campaigned on America first. When have you been about America first over these last few months? You're overseas more than you're here. She wasn't speaking in a literal sense, but she was speaking about his actions. We've seen you go over to the Middle East. You come back with a jet from Qatar, you know, and all of a sudden you're building a ballroom on the White House grounds and all of this other stuff. Okay, you got to do all of these things. Fine. I'm not going to sweat all of that. But what's happening to the American economy? And what do you mean you're going to give a speech and you're going to talk about all the good things that you've done and you're going to talk about affordability in the United States of America? How are you going to do that exactly? Who are you to tell other folks what's affordable and what is not? When you're not living in their world, you don't go to the supermarket and buy your own eggs, your own bread, your own milk, your own cereal, etc. You don't do that. You don't pump your own gas. Okay, you don't do all of these things. So when you say it's a Democratic host, it shows a level of detachment. And I think the thing that hasn't been explained enough and hasn't been talked about enough is the fact that when it comes to the GOP, the fact that he's doing all of this stuff while spewing this kind of rhetoric and turning people off who are moderates, who are middle of the road, who don't want that noise and that chaos. He's doing this before the midterm elections. Usually you'd want to wait after because you don't want to do anything that could get in the way of your side of the aisle winning the midterms. He's officially jeopardizing the GOP with his behavior and his rhetoric. I didn't say policy because that is yet to reach fruition. We don't know. But with his rhetoric and his behavior, his juvenile tendencies, he's jeopardizing the GOP along the way because it's reminding folks from 2020 of what they didn't want to deal with then and what they're not going to want to deal with now. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to hand it to the Democrats because the Democrats don't have leadership as far as most people are concerned right now, meaning a definitive candidate to lean on. But he's opening the door for them, and he doesn't seem to care. And maybe that has something to do with the fact that he doesn't get to run for a third term in 2028 because he doesn't get to circumvent the 22nd Amendment of the United States Constitution that limits you to two terms. Maybe. We'll see. 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. Back with your calls and more to close out hour number one in a minute. You're listening live to The Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more of y'all and yours truly in a minute. Minutes past hour number one, back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. On the Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Smith Joe, courtesy of POTUS Radio, Sirius XM, channel 124, 866-967-6887 is the number to call up. That's 866-96-POTUS. Some point in hour number two, he's on Capitol Hill right now, voting about the GOP planned health care bill. Representative James Clyburn out of South Carolina coming on to promote his new book. and to talk to us about the state of the Democratic Party as we speak. So I'm looking forward to him getting here as soon as he possibly can. Until then, again, your phone calls are welcome. We've got a studio audience here in the nation's capital, right down the block from the state capital. And I'm looking forward to talking to folks, obviously, a bit more. I love talking with the audience. I love talking with my callers and listeners. No problem there. Yes, ma'am. You have a question for me. Your name and the question, please.
Hi, Stephen. My name is Keisha, and I'm from Northern Virginia.
Yes, ma'am.
And actually, great segue for my question, which is about running for office. I'd heard you mention it at one point. It was probably a while ago. But tonight, you've actually talked an awful lot about your opinions, and you've talked an awful lot about you would want to run your own administration as opposed to be in someone else's administration. Okay. So is that something that you really are looking into? And if so, which party? Democrat or Republican?
Into it. I'm saying that I'm taking it very seriously. I've been asked to consider it very seriously, and I'm doing exactly that. I'm living a very, very good life, very fruitful life right now. And if I were to run for office, I'm told I would have to give up a lot of my money. Now, that ain't happening. That's not happening. I'm not doing that, okay? But if there's a way for me to get on that debate stage and debate some of these politicians and the things that they have done to what I consider to be derail our country and to call them on the carpet for it, I will not hesitate to do that. That is not something that I would run from. I have no desire to be a politician. If there were any political position that I would want, it would be one thing and one thing only, to be the president of the United States of America. I'm not interested in being one of 100 senators. I'm not being interested in being one of 435 representatives. If I'm going, I'm going for it all. And I personally don't know what I would do against the Republicans, because you have folks on the right side of the aisle that are obviously going to support their staunch conservative candidates. But I will tell you, for me personally, I believe at this particular moment in time, there isn't a Democrat out there that I can't beat. I don't think the party has the leadership that it needs. Certainly you can beat me if it's contingent on campaign dollars, generating campaign money so you could have your commercial. When I say I can beat him, I'm talking about on the debate stage and at the polls. I'm not talking about all of the other ancillary stuff that comes into the equation that's a part of it. Like, you know, you got to go out there and fundraise. You got to ask people for money. You got to curry favor, which means you're going to owe favors. Oh, no, they can beat me at that. But I'm talking about two things: debate stage and the voting polls. I believe I could win. I truly, truly do. And so I left the door open, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to use the entire year of 2026 to take it very seriously and treat it with the seriousness that it deserves. And somewhere near the end of 2026, early 2027, I'll make my decision. I think it's highly unlikely that I will do it, but I have promised several people that I love and care for very dearly that I will not rule it out, and I will not.
You're sounding very much like a politician, even though you want to try to stay out of it. That sounds very much like a politician.
I don't think I sound like a politician.
Absolutely,
I think I'm giving you an honest answer, because let me tell you this. If I was broke, I would tell you, yeah. But I mean, the fact that, you know, I worked my tail off for 30 years in the business, and I just signed a contract that I never dreamed would be possible with ESPN. And I have a contract with SiriusXM that I never dreamed of. I'm living a very, very fruitful life, and it's a lot to give up. And why would I give it up for nothing but stress? Okay, that is a question mark. The only thing that would be worth it is the presidency of the United States of America. And I think that I personally believe that, of course, I'm not a master of the issues. I'm not an aficionado. I'd have to do a lot of studying. I'm not ready. But come 2027, I would be. I promise you that. I wouldn't get on a debate stage not ready. And I think anybody who sees me debate knows I wouldn't get on a debate stage not ready. That would not happen. So I'm leaving the door open, and I'm very, very serious about leaving the door open. But that's it.
All right. I think that's a good answer. Interesting
well,
to hear. I'm just going to tell you. Love to hear you on a debate stage, because I'd love to hear someone be more for real, all right, yes, being up on the stage.
Oh, people get called out. It would be bad. It would be respectful, but it would be bad. And I mean, I'm not going to give any names or whatever, but it's so much ammunition to go at these candidates with. It wouldn't even be fair, because I don't have a record. They do. See what I'm saying? So it's open season, and it would really be bad for some people to sit across from me on a debate stage with some of the things these politicians and these potential candidates have done.
Well, I'd be
appreciate
looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Will in Missouri. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Will?
Yeah, I know why women tend to be more mature than men. You want to hear it?
I'm not sure I want to hear it, but I will.
I can sum it up in one sentence because I know how people mature. Work through your shit.
Yeah.
If you don't work through your shit, if you bury it, if you swallow it, if you deny it, there are a lot of elderly toddlers running around that have never dealt with their shit. Ever.
Yes, that's three shits. Don't do it a fourth time. Okay? But I get where you're coming from, Will. I appreciate your perspective. Thank you for it. I'm just not sure that's gender driven. I think that both women and men could be accused of that part. That's my only thing that I would say. I think that men have said that about women, accurately so, and more women have said that about men, and that's definitely accurately so. But I appreciate the call, Will. Thank you so much for the call, all right? Let's go to Micah in Philly. You're live with Stephen A. What's up, Micah?
What's going on, Stephen A.? So my question is, on your last take, you mentioned that Donald Trump's, I guess his positions are starting to push away moderate people. As a 35-year-old married with two little girls, and I'm also a black man, I'm also a veteran, I can sit here and tell you that that is not the case from my experience.
From
and
your
I
experience.
I want to know where you're getting that information from.
Excuse me? Anybody would tell you that in this day and age about the moderates. They've written out, read the articles. It could be the Washington Post. It could be the Wall Street Journal. It could be the New York Post, the New York Daily News. It could be the LA Times. It could be the Financial Times. It could be the Wall Street Journal. It could be anything. I mean, it could be Fox News. It could be MSNBC. There are concerns. The Republicans themselves say they have those concerns. I've had Republicans come on this show and say that they have those concerns. They believe in him, but they believe that his rhetoric and his behavior is an issue that turns folks off and reminds them of what was through the whole social justice era of 2019, 2020. And they don't want to return to that kind of chaos. And then you see him in office. And when you want to focus on what he's doing with the border, when you want to focus on the economy, when you want to focus on safety in the streets, when you want to focus on these things, he does something to rile up folks to make them say, is that really, really necessary? We don't need that kind of behavior in the office. Because remember, the presidency is a statesman's position. It's a statesmanship position. The governors of each state, the mayors of each state, you're basically running your respective states. The government, you're talking about the federal government, which is supposed to have 435 congressional figures, along with 100 senators who recognize their constitutional duties to assist in keeping the president in check so you don't have an autocracy or an autocratic society, along with our Supreme Court, along with the federal courts, etc. Everybody has a role to play. And so when you have a situation where people are questioning whether that role is adroitly being played, combined with how he has acted in terms of being a loose cannon, you do have folks on the moderate side out there that says, damn it, damn it, damn it, because they may have lamented what was transpiring with the Democrats in terms of woke culture, cancel culture, etc. But they also don't want it to go to the extreme other side where your belligerence breeds chaos and an absence of peace in the streets is something they concern themselves about and they blame you along with the other side. That's where that comes from.
Quick. So does everybody not realize that this is Trump's last term?
I got you. I'll answer that call at the start of hour number two. We all do realize it's Trump's last term. Does he realize that it's his last term? That's the right question to ask, my brother. You didn't do that, Micah, but I forgive you. Hour number two up next. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Don't go away.
Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
Hour number two. A Straight Shooter with Stephen A. right here with you in front of a live studio audience inside the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., right down the block from the nation's capital. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter, Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. Before I get back to callers, along with folks right here in the studio audience, I'll get to you in a second. The GOP just passed some vote on health care. My producers want to hand me the story. I would tell you, don't bother. It's not necessary. It's not going anywhere because it's going to be dead in the Senate. Okay, so we all know this is just a bunch of pomp and circumstance. It's much ado about nothing until stuff is voted across the aisle and you have enough folks on both sides of the aisle that push forth a new health care bill. It's not going anywhere. And I think that the GOP ultimately will pay the price if indeed the subsidies for this Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, doesn't get resolved, whether it's a 1-year extension or a 3-year extension to extend the subsidies. If that stuff doesn't get resolved, no matter what the GOP says, I think they're going to bear the brunt of the blame because you've had ample opportunity to find a resolution and you haven't. Where is your plan? That's what they're going to say about the GOP, which is what they've always said about the GOP. Trump talking about wanting to put pockets, dollars in the pockets of Americans. When you talk about $1,500 to $2,000, really? That's what we're doing? What is that going to amount to? What's that going to resolve? Have you seen the cost of medical bills? That ain't going to cut the mustard. You want insurance to pick that up so those premiums don't elevate sky high and you're not handicapped. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. So that ain't going to work. Okay. That's him living pie in the sky. It seems a bit detached, to say the least. But that's neither here nor there. Let's go back to our studio audience here. Since I'm here in the nation's capital in front of some very, very lovely people. Always appreciate y'all. Thank y'all so much for being here. So let me hear your name and your question.
Sure. Brandon from Omaha, Nebraska. The question I have for you, with politicians beginning to campaign for the midterms, how do you think the Democratic Party should engage with young voters who are disengaged by sitting out or switching party lines in the previous election?
You got to talk about affordability. You can't be talking about woke culture. You can't be talking about cancel culture. You can't be talking about identity politics. You got to be talking about practical, down-home issues that affect the everyday American citizen. And that's about affordability and safety. You have to focus on that. And if you don't do that, you're going to lose. It's that simple. You got to remember some of the things that transpired. Like, for example, I was very happy, you know, when you see a president like Joe Biden giving money to HBCUs, when you see how, you know, the unemployment rate had improved, but it was a byproduct of folks getting a lot of government jobs, a lot of federal jobs. Well, guess what? That's not going to last because in some people's eyes, that contributes to debt. That contributes to debt, which is what Trump did. And when the minute he came in there, courtesy of him and Elon Musk, they cut out programs. They cut out assistance, U.S. aid and other things. They did these kind of things. And that was problematic. And so now that you move forward, you got to remember what America is supposed to be about. It's a capitalistic society. People are trying to get paid. The small business atmosphere, that stratosphere is what you really, really got to focus on. And you got to make sure that you focus every bit as much on the private sector as you do on the public sector, because the private sector is what's going to ultimately feed the economic system that we're living in. If it's government jobs and what have you, even though that's good because people are going to have money, and the more money they have, the more they're willing to spend, particularly during the holidays and things of that nature. The fact of the matter is, it's still costing the government. And you got to find a way to trim that $38.4 trillion deficit. You got to find a way to go about the business of making sure that people have money in their pockets so they can spend and fuel the economy without costing the government. If you do that, that's when you're leaning towards a path of more success. Until you do that, it's going to be a struggle and it's inescapable. The Democrats forgot about that. And I'm going to say this, and I've never said this on before. I'm going to say this now, and I know it's going to be controversial, but I don't give a damn. The LGBTQ community, I support that. I totally do. I always have, I always will. I am a fiscal conservative. I am a social liberal. When it comes to my money, I can't stand high taxes. I don't want to live in California. I don't want to live in New Jersey no more. I don't want to live in New York anymore. I'm tired of them damn taxes. You understand? I'm tired of it. Tired of it. Tired of it. Okay? But when it comes to you and how you choose to live your life, I'm all for it. Live your life. Be all you can be. But there are exceptions. When you're Kamala Harris and you're caught on tape saying that you support prisoners having sex changes and it being funded by the government, which is what they were accusing her of saying, because obviously that's something that would be federally funded as opposed to something coming out of their pocket. That's problematic. When you are a trans individual who's transitioning from male to female, that's your business. It's no problem. Right up until the moment you decide that you want to play sports and compete with ladies, how fair is that to the ladies? When genetically speaking, there's no way that you don't have an advantage. There's no way. So, and then last but not least, how can anybody be on a record like Gavin Newsom was recently? And he talked about trans children. And then you have people reminding you that there were folks on the Democratic side who were supportive of children transitioning without parental consent. Now, the average American citizen out there, if you ask them to raise their hand and says, do you approve of anybody telling you that your child can do anything without your permission, let alone that? You don't even have to go there. You don't even have to go to a trans child transitioning from male to female. You ain't have to go there. All you have to go is ask a very simple and generic question. Are you in support of somebody telling you that your child, a child, can do anything without your consent? Anything. Something as simple as going downstairs to grab candy at 10 o'clock at night instead of taking you behind the bed. A parent will lose their mind over that. Because it's my child. Who are you to tell me what you can do with my child? These are practical issues. You don't have to be a politician. You don't have to be knowledgeable about policies and all of that stuff to know that there are certain things that are just flagrantly wrong. But that was what was happening in the eyes of the American voter, which scared the living hell out of people. And so those are the kind of things that can't happen. If the Democrats stay away from that stuff and get back to reminding people that they are the ones, they are the party for the American citizen. They are the party that cares about the impoverished and disenfranchised. They are the party that cares about uplifting the poor. They are the party that first gave you access, whether it's through civil rights, voting rights, or the Act of 1968. I'm sorry. When you talk about those things, they're like, wait a minute. Hold on. Those are the things that gave us access to capital. That is what you need to be reminding people of when you talk about the future of Americans. When you start getting on a moral high ground and telling people how to live, now more so than ever before, you're going to lose the American voter, because the American voter has never been more belligerent as they are in this day and age. They do not want to be told what to do because they look at previous generations as having failed this country. With our deficit, with the deterioration of our society, what we do behaviorally, etc. They believe we have let them down. They ain't trying to listen. So us telling them what to do on a moral high ground ain't gonna work. But when you start talking money and affordability and safety, oh, they'll listen to that. They will listen to that. 866-967-6887 is the number called. It's 866-96-POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. He is here. Representative from South Carolina. 30 years plus from South Carolina. Representative James Clyburn. In the house with yours truly. Right after this break. Don't go away. Minutes past hour number two back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith. It is my honor and privilege to have my next guest in studio. He is the third ranking Democrat in the House of Representatives, serving South Carolina's 6th congressional district for over 30 years. He is a member of the influential House Appropriations Committee, and his new book is titled The First Eight, A Personal History of the Pioneering Black Congressman Who Shaped a Nation. Please welcome to the show one and only Congressman James Clyburn. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you.
We'll get to your book in just a couple of minutes or so. I've got to ask you, there was a vote in the House today. Obviously, the GOP voted to their health care plan. They voted it, but obviously a lot of people are anticipating it's going to be dead in the Senate. What can you say about the state of this Affordable Care Act subsidies and what's being voted on and how this whole process has been going?
Well, thanks very much for asking that question, because I want to do a couple of things. First of all, I'm no longer the third ranking I used to be.
Okay.
Secondly, the Affordable Care Act, and I want to emphasize that, because we nicknamed it Obamacare. Someone decided to be a little bit derogatory when they started that. Mm. But we named that the Affordable Care Act because we wanted health care to be affordable and accessible for everybody. And so what happened today is that the Republicans put up what they would like to see rather than what some of their own members wanted to see. I don't know if you've seen the report on this, but four of them signed the discharge petition to put on the floor in a bill that will allow a 3-year extension of tax credits. Mm-hmm. Now, they always say subsidies when they talk about low-income and middle-income people, but it's tax cuts and tax breaks when they talk about wealthy people. These are tax cuts that will allow the implementation of the bill. And so I think that when we get back here in January, the speaker's going to have to put that bill on the floor. And I think it's going to get to 218 votes. The fact of the matter is it's got 218 votes to come to the floor. And so we'll pass it. And it'll go over to the Senate. And I don't know what's going to happen when it gets to the Senate, but I will hope that at least 60 people over there will allow a vote on this. Because why should the richest country in the world not have health care accessible and affordable by all of its citizens?
I don't disagree with that. The four Republicans that obviously sided with the Democrats on this, that crossed party lines, Representative Brian Fitzpatrick out of Pennsylvania, Representative Robert Bresnahan out of Pennsylvania, Representative Ryan McKenzie out of Pennsylvania, Representative Mike Lawler out of New York. Right. Those were the four right there. I get where you're coming from. What about the arguments that the GOP side would make that Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, as you would say, they named it Obamacare derogatorily, as you pointed out. They wanted it attached to the Democratic Party. But their belief was, is that it wasn't going to be sustainable, that it wasn't going to be affordable, that it was going to be far more expensive than the Democrats ever led on. Their argument has been and continues to be that they've been proven right. What do you say to that when we look at the situation with the Affordable Care Act as we speak?
Well, nothing is free. Tax cuts for the rich are not free. Much more expensive than health care for the low income. So they got a problem if it costs money to provide health care, but no problem taking money out of the coffers, giving the wealthy, corporations, and individuals free. That's what they're doing. Not paying taxes.
So your mentality is, and speaking not just for yourself, but for the Democratic Party, the belief is that, excuse me, you know, here they come and they want to give tax cuts to the wealthy. And you're talking about ultimately costing our government an additional $3 trillion. I think I saw the number. It was around that number. Well, if you could come up with $3 trillion for your side in terms of your agenda and what you want, how come you can't come up, whether it's $1.5 trillion or less, for the Democratic side in terms of addressing the Affordable Health Care Act, particularly when a lot of people from red states are using the Affordable Care Act?
Absolutely. And as we say down in Gullah Geechee country, pazakle.
Pazakle. Representative James Clyburn right here with Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith. Let's get to this question. When you think about what the Democratic Party has been in recent years and where it is right now, how are you feeling? Not about being a Democrat, but about being about the state of affairs going on with this Democratic Party. A lot of people look at the Democratic Party right now and they question whether or not there's any true leadership. And do you have somebody that can really, really resonate to a point where you can end off knocking off whatever GOP candidate they throw out there?
Well, you know, Hakeem Jeffries is our leader.
Okay.
He's an outstanding leader.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you ought to look for in a leader is who can create a climate within which we can find common ground for everybody to come to the table. That's why those four people signed on to that discharge petition, because Hakeem Jeffries has created a climate in our caucus, on the floor, to allow them the comfort that they need to come to the issue. For some strange reason, people want to judge leadership by how loud you can talk, by how dramatically you can cuss. That's not Hakeem Jeffries. And quite frankly, that's not Jim Clyburn. I do believe in making headway rather than headlines. And that's what Hakeem Jeffries has been around.
Respectfully, here's where the problem lies. Everything you just described could easily describe the incumbent in office as we speak. Popularity, he's a populist. He can get loud. He can be a bit acerbic. He can do those kind of things. And you said people judge leadership in a certain kind of way. And I'm saying to you, well, that's who the president is. And apparently, you know, that's who you would have had to beat in 2024. That didn't work. If J.D. Vance, the vice president, decides to mimic Trump's behavior, he'll probably be the popular candidate for 2028. How concerned are you that that's what you have to compete against? And how can you adapt to that?
Well, I don't think we have to adapt to that. And I think that's the problem now. We should not make normal that which is abnormal. That is abnormal behavior that we're getting from this president. And why should you or me, anybody else, try to find ways to make it normal? I don't consider it to be normal to insult. I'm the father of three highly intelligent black women. And when I see someone in office that look for opportunities to insult black women, which is what this president does day in and day out.
Well, that's,
why should that be normalized?
That's one of the categories, because to me, he insults everybody.
Well,
he insults everybody.
Well, nobody should be voting for him.
Okay.
So,
but 77 million people did.
Yes, absolutely. Because people confuse boisterous behavior with leadership.
Is it possible that that's not what they did? That instead what they did was look at the Democratic side and say they didn't like what they were getting because the Democratic side didn't represent what James Clyburn stands for. It didn't represent what others have stood for that are traditional members of the Democratic Party. They saw a change shifting within the Democratic Party that leaned a bit further left, that were deemed to be just as unreasonable as folks on the far right. And as a result, they chose what they deemed to be the best of two evils, per se.
Well, the question is, why they didn't see it? Maybe they couldn't get beyond gender. And our nominee happened to have been a black or African-American, Asian-American woman.
Right.
So it's one thing not to be able to get there. It's something else when the reasons you aren't able to get there are not normal and or not apropos.
Well, let me say this, because I'm not going to say this behind your back and not say it to your face. I'm sitting right here in front of you. I emphatically disagree with what you just alluded to in terms of it might be gender driven. I think about Hillary Rodham Clinton getting 2.9 million votes more than Trump in 2016. I think about Kamala Harris getting nearly 75 million votes, the largest for a Democrat in history. I think about governors in New York, governor-elects in Jersey and recently Virginia. I think about former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who was considered one of the most influential figures in our nation's history. I think about all of these things, and I say those things don't hint towards a gender-driven agenda where it's, okay, because she's a female, I'm not going to vote for her. Because I think if that was the case, Kamala Harris wouldn't have been immediately inserted, even even though she had only 107 days to win the election. That's my opinion. And I certainly disagree with Michelle Obama when she said she doesn't think we're ready. I think we're very ready as a country to elect a woman, because I think women, by and large, are smarter, more composed, more disciplined than the men have proven to be. That's my position. You don't feel that way?
I feel that way. I just told you, I got three hot, intelligent black
men. I have two.
Who I have followed.
Yes.
I stayed married to the same woman for 58 years.
Yeah.
Would not be where I got to be but for her.
Mm-hmm.
I believe all of that. But I also know that there are people, black and white, who will refuse to vote for a woman. I know that. And I think you know that. Now, the question is, right, when you got an electoral college vote,
mm-hmm,
and you can vary in a sophisticated way, target your election, your campaign, so as to make a difference,
mm-hmm,
in the states that will yield the electoral votes, which is what they did,
mm-hmm,
and were successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
So Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than Trump, but she didn't get elected president.
It's electoral college.
Yes. And I'm just saying, gender and race can make a difference in the electoral college, which is why I wrote this book.
Okay.
And this book will tell you why these 8 people, African-Americans, except for one who chose to be an African-American,
mm-hmm,
these 8 people lost their standing in the political community over the issue of race.
Mm.
Nothing else. So don't tell me that all of a sudden race does not matter. Historically, in this country, mm-hmm, it always has.
I would never say race didn't matter. When you say race, I didn't utter a word. I'm saying gender more so.
All of them are men.
Right. Okay.
And at the time that they were elected, women were not allowed to vote. Why? Mm-hmm. If they're so intelligent, as you say, why were they not allowed to vote, mm-hmm, in the 1870s? When these men serve.
What inspired,
just because they were women.
What inspired you to write this book now? All right,
well,
let me remind about the first 8, a personal history of pioneering black congressmen who shaped a nation. What inspired you to write it in the year 2025? You've been in Congress since 1993. Why now?
Well, this is my third book.
Okay.
By
the way.
Talk
about this book.
Okay.
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 Okay. Okay. Okay. I'm just saying this book.
I just want you to know I was writing before I got to Congress.
I got you.
So, this book, it was driven by 2 things. The first, I undertook the effort because a group of people came to my office one day and asked me about these 8 pictures up on my wall.
Okay.
Who are they? And when I explained who they were, one of them said, well, I thought you were the first African-American to serve in Congress from South Carolina. And I kind of playfully said, no, before I was first, there were 8. And I said to my staff later that day, I'm going to write my next book is going to be about these 8 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got into about 67% into the book, the 2020 elections came.
Mm.
And then January 6th, 2021 occurred.
Yes.
And I said,
the insurrection.
Wait a minute. Absolutely.
Yes.
This book has got to be about more than informing. It has to be instructive. So I got back with my editor, and I got back with the publisher, and I says, we got to change directions with this book.
Mm-hmm.
So this book took on what I call a cautionary tale. Because when I used to teach history, I used to tell my students all the time, you study this history not in spite of the fact you may think it's boring. You study it because it's instructive. Anything that's happened before can happen again. Why do you hear people talk about the 1960s at the second Reconstruction? The only way you can have a second Reconstruction is for there to be a first Reconstruction.
Right.
And if you got a second Reconstruction, that means the first one came to an end. And so if the first Reconstruction could come to an end, as it did, the second one that people talk about from the 1960s, when I was hanging out in jails all over the South.
Yes, you were.
It could come to an end as well. And so this book, I wrote it to be instructive for people. Here is what is happening right before your eyes. Don't make these things normal. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
But when you say the word instructive, that's providing instructions on what Absolutely. To do to prevent something. So give it to us. I'm going to use the lineup to make you smile. You're sitting, behind, you're leaning on a pillow, mm-hmm. and that pillow says the Black Eagle, the one and only, you know,
Joe Madison.
Well, God rest his soul. And he used to say his favorite line was, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to bring it where the goats can get it. That's what he used to say all the time. So give it to us. When you're talking about being instructive, what are you instructing folks to do moving forward to prevent the 60s and prior from repeating itself?
Well, let me just say, Joe Madison was one of my best friends.
Yes, a great man.
We were very close friends.
A great
friends.
Man, yes.
But he was not the first Black Eagle.
Okay.
Number 8 in this book, George Washington Murray, you will see he was referred to back in the 1890s as the Black Eagle.
Yes, sir.
And so, anything that's happened before can happen again. So, what I want people to understand that in this book, you're going to find that the three most consequential things that happened to Black folks after the Civil War were each decided by a single vote. When Andrew Johnson started out to undo what Abraham Lincoln had done with the Emancipation Proclamation and what the Civil War had yielded, he was impeached by the House of Representatives. That impeachment was sent to the Senate, and the Senate failed to convict him by a single vote. If he had been convicted, then it would have stopped what turned out to be an effort about 8 years later in the election between the 1876 presidential election.
Okay.
The contest was between Rutherford B. Hayes of Ohio, Samuel Tilden of New York. And when the voting was over, in the Electoral College, you needed 185 votes. Tilden had 184. Mm. Miss it by one vote. And then Hayes had 165. There were 20 votes coming out of three states, three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. Mm-hmm. 20 votes in question. If Hayes can get those 20 votes, he goes from 165 to 185.
Mm-hmm.
And would become president by one vote. The House couldn't figure out what to do because the election got thrown into the House of Representatives. So the House put together this 15-member commission. So y'all go out, y'all meet with the candidates, y'all come back and make some recommendations as to what we ought to do. These 15 people met with the candidates and voted 8-7 to give those 20 votes to Hayes. Why? Because Hayes promised them, give me those votes. I know what y'all want down there in Florida, over there in Louisiana, and there in South Carolina. Give me these 20 votes, I will bring it in to Reconstruction. They gave him the 20 votes. He became president by one vote. The vote was 8-7 to end Reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
The vote was 185-184 to begin Jim Crow.
Wow.
That's what this book is all about, to tell you how that happened. It didn't happen because some big groundswell came. No. This country was evenly divided back then, just like it is now. And so if we can retrogress into another Jim Crow era by single votes, your single vote could be the one that caused it again. That throughout this book, and then I go into the epilogue to tell you how you ought to conduct yourself on this TV show.
Mm-hmm. On this TV show?
Absolutely.
Really? So, okay.
Read the epilogue.
Well, hold on. I'm sitting right next to you.
Absolutely.
Feel free to tell me. I can take it.
No.
I'm sitting right here.
No.
I'll listen. I will listen.
I want you to read this book.
I will read this book. Especially, I was going to read it anyway, but especially after what you just said, I'm definitely going to read it. Make no mistake about it.
And
you don't have to worry about that.
And I want your listeners to read it, too. And I want them to look at the headlines that come out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to see what happened back in the 80s and 90s. I just told you about the Black Eagle. Number seven in this list was called the Canary. They hung nicknames on them meant to be derogatory. They used the judicial system to indict them, put them in jail, to get them out of office. So when you hear somebody saying, put her in jail, that's the same thing they were saying back in the 1870s. Same thing.
Well, see, here's my issue. So I'm sitting right next to you. And I'm going to read. I'm going to read that. But like, make no mistake about that. I appreciate you giving me the heads up about that. But when we're talking about what the kind of things that you're talking about, some people would look at it and they'd say, okay, that's a moral position to take. And that should absolutely positively matter. But you also know you're too knowledgeable, you're too smart, you've been around too long not to know that a lot of times the American citizen will shove that aside when they're concerned about their own welfare and their well-being, affordability, safety in the streets, etc. And this last election that Kamala Harris lost to Donald Trump, I thought it was the ultimate indictment against the Democratic Party, because despite how this incumbent behaves, how he acts, how he talks, the rhetoric he spews, etc., America said he's closer to normal than the Democratic Party. That's what they said with their votes. How do you explain that? Because people want to know. The Democratic Party, in their eyes, have changed so much. And people like yourself and others who represented a different Democratic Party came across as if you caved to the extreme left. And that, and the American people were saying, you don't deserve our vote by the majority. They do, because at least they are who they are and we know who they are. What the hell about y'all? What do you say to that?
Well, it all depends on what you choose. I grew up in the parsonage. Now, I decided not to follow my father into the ministry. But when I told my dad that I was not going to go to the seminary, as we had discussed, you know, getting out of jail for the third or fourth time, I figured that wasn't working too well. And so he said to me on that occasion, well, son, I suspect the world would much rather see a sermon than to hear one. And the problem we've got, I think, is summed up in Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from the Birmingham City Jail. When King was asked to leave Birmingham because folks saw him as a disruptive force. But they also said, now, we believe in your cause. Your cause is right, but your timing is wrong. Now, I think that people say, well, it's right that we should have a woman president, but the time ain't right. Your timing is wrong. But you know what King said to them? He said, you know, in that letter, he says, I'm coming to the conclusion that the people of ill will in our society are making a much better use of time than the people of goodwill. And I think that what is happening in our society today is that those people of goodwill have not done a good enough job of making use of their time.
Why haven't they?
Simply because I do believe that we have allowed the people of ill will to normalize things that should not be normalized. There are people who says, just give it time. Just give it time. It'll all work out. No. Time is what we make it. Time is never right. Time is never wrong. Time is always what we make it. And I do not believe that we've done a good enough job in using time. Now, I can prove that to you. Just look at the election results. If you look at when Barack Obama was elected president, and you look at the vote that the Democrats got 2 years later when we lost 64 seats.
Yes.
The other side got the same level of votes that they got when Barack lost. Barack won. Then they came back 2 years later and got the same votes. Our vote dropped off.
Okay. So because, go ahead.
Because I really believe that we have come to the conclusion in all too many instances. Now, once we elect you, then we expect for you to deliver for us, but we don't have any, we don't need to vote anymore. And that's what happened.
Is it? Is it though, Representative Clyburn?
No, just look at the results.
I'm just saying, but could it be? Listen,
I am not one to ever sit here and discourage people from voting. You go to the polls. Too many sacrifices have been made. I can't stand people that don't vote. I have no respect for them. Vote, damn it, vote. But the flip side to it, how you vote, you have that level of freedom. And is it possible that they didn't vote and you lost 64 seats and you look at the state of the Democratic Party as you're transitioning that from 2012 to 2016 to 2020 to 2024? Is it possible that people are looking at the Democratic Party and they're saying, excuse me, it's not about our disdain for him this go round. It's about what we don't like from this party. This party doesn't represent what it used to represent when it comes to representing the American citizen. There are people who have been accusing the Democratic Party of doing just that.
Yeah, and you've been one of them.
Yes, I have.
So, but let me tell you this. If that were true, why did we get the result we just got in New Jersey? Why did we get the result we just got in Virginia?
Well, I would answer that by saying they were preaching the right message.
No.
They weren't talking about the kind of stuff you were talking about leading into the 2024 election.
What do you mean? Like what?
I'm just saying identity politics, woke culture stuff.
But the president says the affordability is a hoax.
He clearly is wrong. He clearly is wrong. I mean, we got
that ain't the only thing he's wrong about.
He's wrong about a lot.
Yes.
I'm not denying that.
So, but he's president.
Okay.
So he got to be president, I think, because the people of goodwill did not do a good enough job.
Okay.
And therefore the people of ill will outworked us. Mm-hmm. And that's why we lost. Remember when we passed the Affordable Care Act.
Okay.
And we lost because we allowed the other side to define what we had done.
But Representative Clapper, that's where I'm going. I'm saying when you say the people of goodwill allowed the people of ill will to do X, Y, and Z, you're talking about just the other side of the aisle. I'm talking about your side of the aisle, too. There were people on your side of the aisle that wasn't deemed as having goodwill necessarily. What? They were going against the likes of you and others. They felt that y'all weren't being strong enough. Y'all weren't being as leftist as you needed to be.
Because people mistake strength for boisterous. You know, if you yell loud enough, you call them names, you be boisterous, man, you sure enough give them hell. Well, the question is, what did we do? That's the question. I don't think I have to use profanity in order to be effective.
I'm not gonna mention any names, but you know, you got a governor in California, you got a representative in Texas, you got a representative in New York, along with various others that used similar language, and the Democratic Party didn't seem to have a problem with that.
Well, yes, I've always had a problem with him. A problem with him, I would use it.
All right.
You never heard me use it.
Right.
Because I got a problem with it.
Got it. Even with your own party.
I try to conduct myself in office the way I want my grandchildren to see their elected official conduct themselves.
Yes, sir.
I'm not going to use words as a congressman from South Carolina that I want my grandchildren to be comfortable using when they go to first and second grade, if that be the case.
Let me ask.
So what I'm saying is, I believe that you all mistake loudness with proudness.
You talking about me? Personally?
Anybody.
No, it sounded like you said me. I'm just sorry. I apologize. I'm just making good.
There's another thing we said down in Gullah Geechee Country. A hit dog will holler.
Representative Clyburn right here with your straight shooter with yours truly. You got, you know, listen, you're viewed as a kingmaker. You got a, everybody knows that if it wasn't for your endorsement and your support of Joe Biden in 2020 heading into the South Carolina primaries, that he probably would not have won the election. As we fast forward to the year 2025, how do you feel about being recognized in that regard? How do you feel about Joe Biden's presidency? And most importantly, how do you feel about how he departed?
Because I believe Joe Biden, when historians look back on what he did in office, when he passed the rescue plan that brought this economy out of the ditch, when he passed the largest infrastructure bill in the history of the country, bigger than Eisenhower's big interstate highway, it started a revolution and a, let's just say, an innovation in our water systems, our highways, people getting safe drinking water for the first time. He passed the Inflation Reduction Act and said that insulin, my late wife battled diabetes for 30 years. She lost that battle. She lost that battle after having 5 vessel bypass, a stroke, total kidney failure. She was paying $600, $700, and $800 a month for insulin. She was a 4-shot-a-day diabetic. Joe Biden says, this country got the rights to insulin for $1. And we should not be misusing it that way. So we could put a cap on insulin for everybody on Medicare to $35 a month. Do you know what a difference that made?
Huge.
In the lives of people like my late wife? Mm-hmm. Now, she could afford the $600 and $700 a month. But people without insurance, people with even with the Affordable Care Act, they couldn't. And Joe Biden did that. Joe Biden, the PAC Act. How many people you know? I mean, they were classmates of mine. Mm-hmm. They may have been classmates of your parents.
Okay.
You know, I just had the 46th anniversary of my 39th birthday. And so, you know, so I got grandchildren almost right. Your age.
Yes, sir.
But look, when he passed the PAC Act, you know what the PAC Act did? The PAC Act went back and picked up all those soldiers coming back from the Vietnam War that were getting 5 and 10% disability when they were entitled to 95 and 100%. We did that with the PAC Act. You can go through Joe Biden's entire record, and it will be surpassed only by one modern president, and that's Lyndon Baines Johnson.
But we all know.
And history is going to do that for him.
But we all know, listen, Father Time is undefeated.
Yeah.
And it affects all of us differently.
Yeah.
He was on that debate stage against Trump June 27th of 2024. It was not a good look.
No, it wasn't.
It was not a good look. And that's what led to him departing and Kamala Harris getting the Democratic nomination. What one would ask is somebody as yourself, being as cogent, as lucid, as on top of his game as anybody, what someone would ask of you is that did you see a person that was ready? Did you see a person that needed to go? Did you have those conversations with him?
No.
Because even to this day, people ask that because the other side will say that was what they were willing to give the American people. And they'll use that as a tool to condemn the Democratic Party. They'll throw anything. They'll throw any kind of wool over your eyes just to get what they want. Now, we could easily accuse the other side of doing the same.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, they position the Democratic Party to be viewed that way. What do you say to that?
I would say that they're right to raise those questions. You asked me, did I see that? No, I saw it when you just saw it. You know, I didn't live with Joe Biden. He wasn't in my office. I wasn't in his office. I didn't see him every day. And when I saw that debate, I had the same concerns that everybody else had about debate. Now, the question then becomes, was that a one-off or was that indicative of a situation that would continue? Look, how many of you in the audience have ever been looking for your cell phone and had it in your hand? I mean, that's indicative. It happens.
Right.
And so is that what happened to him? Or was that some condition that would last? Now, I think most people felt that it was a condition rather than a one-off. I can understand that. But if you ask me, did I see that?
Okay.
Not until that evening.
Before I let you get on out of here, because we only got a few minutes left, and I thank you for your time. I truly am honored to have you. I got to ask you this. The midterms are approaching.
Yep.
Next year. How are you feeling about your party? The state that it's in right now? And I know Hakeem Jeffries as a leader of the House. I'm talking about a candidate out there that has national appeal that can galvanize the Democratic Party to go up against guys on the other side of the aisle. How confident are you feeling you guys will find that for the midterms and ultimately heading into 2028?
Let me tell you, I'm as confident about that as I am about anything that I've ever encountered. I just came in this past weekend. I spent in Philadelphia. Last week and before, I've been in Tennessee, Kentucky. I did a podcast with Beshear, the governor of Kentucky.
Yes.
I'm getting ready to do a podcast with the governor of California.
Yes.
I'm on the phone often with the governor of Maryland.
Yes.
I'm on my way back to New York after the holidays, and I'm going to tell you, we've got candidates out there that I believe are waiting in the wings and waiting for the arena to be established. And I think the American people are going to be very, very pleased with the choices that we're going to give them.
I like Wes Moore a lot out of Maryland. I like Josh Shapiro a lot out of Pennsylvania. I'm worried about Gavin Newsom with affordability issues in California. That's where I'm at with that, with Gavin Newsom. And I think he's got a lot of questions to answer about what's been going on in the state of California in order for him to have a real viable chance. But I think Wes Moore's the real deal. I think Josh Shapiro's the real deal as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. In fact, I was on the stage. I said the stage Sunday with Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an outstanding governor. I think it was an outstanding attorney general. And I think that if he were to make the choice, he would be an outstanding candidate for president. And so would Wes Moore. So would Gavin Newsom. So would Beshear. And there are others out there who I have not gotten the chance yet to share the stage with. But when I get back to New York, I will.
Is there a female candidate out there that
the governor of Michigan falls in that category?
Okay, Governor Whitman.
Whitman is an outstanding governor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you had a female, because I didn't want to leave out female names. I didn't want to be accused of leaving out female names.
Well, I'll be the last Congress person in the world to leave women out of this, because I have to go home.
My last question to you is that this book, what are you hoping? Got about a minute left. What are you hoping we walk away grasping, holding on to, and ultimately learning from this book?
Holding on to the fact that every single vote counts. And it's in this book. Holding on to the fact that we all have roles to play. These eight people, all African Americans, one by choice.
Mm-hmm.
Only three of the eight were ever enslaved. You had one of the most outstanding lawyers to ever walk the earth in Robert Brown Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Was one of these eight people. The only genuine hero of the Civil War, Robert Smalls, was number six in this group.
Mm-hmm.
Know that they were different. They didn't agree all the time.
Right.
But learn from this book the value of being agreeable.
I got to go. Show's over. I want to thank you for being here. Honored and privileged to have you. I've been an admirer of yours for a long time. I'm going to watch my tone. I'm going to watch everything moving forward, because I want to make sure that Representative Clyburn is not displeased with me. And I want you to also know you're welcome back to the show anytime.
Well, thank you so much. But make sure that the little children out there are also pleased with you.
Absolutely.
Be an example.
Yes, sir. I have my instructions, ladies and gentlemen. Representative Clyburn, with yours truly.
Thank you.
Honored and privileged to have you, sir. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, happy holidays to all of you. Stephen A. signing off. Peace and love. Happy New Year. See you in the new year.